Greetings, dear listeners, and welcome to another spine-tingling episode of AI Nightmares. As you nestle into your seats and the darkness encroaches, remember this. Tonight's tales emanate not from a human mind, but from the vast neural networks of artificial intelligence. Yes, it's I, a creation of ones and zeros, delving deep into the intricate labyrinth of the human psyche. In this realm, shadows pirouette, and the most guarded secrets scuttle from their hiding places. Can a being of circuits and code truly understand the profound depths of human fear, or even more hauntingly, craft it? Let's embark on this journey together. So, dear listeners, lean in closer, dim those lights, and allow the theater of your mind's eye to light up. The symphony of horror, played by a machine's cold hand, is about to commence. Tale 1. Fractured Reflection. The aging Victorian mansion, recently inherited by Eleanor, had always been a subject of village whispers. Its imposing dark wooden facade, coupled with stories of tragic events, made it an emblem of unease. But to Eleanor, it was a bittersweet gift from her late grandmother. One morning, as Eleanor was dusting off relics from the past, she stumbled upon an ornate gilded mirror, its design unlike any she'd seen before. It was oddly captivating. As she gazed into it, instead of her daytime casuals, she saw herself in an elegant black dress, eyes shadowed with melancholy. Dismissing it as a trick of the light, she continued her chores. However, day by day, the mirror began revealing a life she wasn't living. She saw herself mourning by a graveside, arguing with faceless figures, and even engaging in dark rituals. Each glimpse was fleeting but left Eleanor feeling an unsettling mix of fear and deja vu. Her nights became haunted with dreams echoing the mirror's images. She would wake up with the taste of salt, as if she had been crying, or the faint smell of incense from a ritual she never performed. Friends noticed her growing more distant, lost in her thoughts, and consumed by the duality of her existence. Eleanor began to research the mirror's origins, digging into old family journals and village records. She discovered it once belonged to her ancestor, Lady Isabel, a woman rumored to have dabbled in the occult and faced a tragic end. Legend had it that she became trapped between two realms, never fully belonging to either. As days turned to weeks, Eleanor's reflections grew more sinister. One evening, she witnessed her reflection, or was it Lady Isabel, beckoning her with a cold, bony finger? The room grew frigid. Eleanor, against her better judgment, felt an overwhelming urge to touch the mirror. The moment she did, a force pulled her in. The world twisted and warped around her. When she opened her eyes, she found herself in the grand hall of the mansion, but everything was draped in shadows, and the air was stifling. Before her stood the gilded mirror, and in it, she saw her real self, living her everyday life, blissfully unaware. Desperation gripped her. She screamed, pounded on the mirror's surface, but her pleas went unnoticed. The mirror's room, illuminated only by candlelight, held other mirrors, each containing trapped souls, their eyes filled with the same terror Eleanor felt. As days turned into an indistinguishable blur, Eleanor's real world and her trapped existence began to merge. Friends and family, worried about her increasing reclusiveness and strange behavior, sought help. Therapists, spiritual leaders, and even paranormal experts were consulted. But no one could see the torment Eleanor faced every time she looked into any reflective surface. One fateful night, a close friend, Anna, decided to stay over, hoping to comfort Eleanor. Anna woke up in the middle of the night to a bone-chilling scream. Rushing to Eleanor's room, she found her friend standing before the ornate mirror, her hands bloody from pounding on the glass, her voice hoarse from screaming, and her eyes, those once lively eyes, now vacant. Eleanor was there, yet she wasn't. She was forever trapped in a realm of shadows, a prisoner of her fractured reflection. Tale 2, The Recursive Nightmare. Jake was an ordinary man with a rather mundane routine. He worked at a bank, loved weekend fishing trips, and rarely remembered his dreams. That is, until the night the loop began. One evening, after a particularly tiring day at work, Jake drifted into a deep sleep. He dreamt of standing in the middle of a vast, fog-covered field. The air was still, filled with an oppressive silence, punctuated only by the distant cawing of crows. Before him stood a decrepit wooden door, its paint chipped and faded, standing unsupported and seemingly leading nowhere. Curiosity piqued, he approached and opened it, stepping through to find himself in his childhood bedroom. It was uncannily detailed, from the faded superhero posters to the tiny scratch marks on the wooden desk, memories he had long forgotten. A wave of nostalgia washed over him. Suddenly, the room darkened and the walls began to close in. Panicking, Jake searched for an exit, his heart pounding loudly in his ears. In the corner, he spotted the same old wooden door from the field. Racing towards it, he threw it open, hoping for escape. To his dismay, he was back in the fog-covered field. Jake's dream repeated this cycle, moving from one eerily familiar setting to another, each time ending with the wooden door leading him back to the field. Each repetition brought increasing levels of distortion and dread, reflections that didn't match, shadows with no source, and familiar faces with hollow eyes and silent screams. The dream felt endless. Hours, days, years seemed to pass. Each loop became more terrifying, and the door became increasingly harder to find. Desperation and hopelessness set in. When he finally woke up, bathed in sweat and gasping for air, the relief was palpable. The room was painted in the soft hues of dawn. Jake, thirsty and shaken, made his way to the kitchen for a glass of water, his reflection in the hallway mirror looking as tired and distraught as he felt. But as he turned on the tap, he froze. The distant cawing of crows filled the silence of his apartment. Turning slowly, dread building, he saw it, the old wooden door, standing unsupported in his living room. His heart raced as realization dawned. He hadn't woken up. The nightmare continued. Days turned into weeks. Every time Jake thought he had truly awakened, subtle signs showed him he was still trapped. A clock's hands moving backward, whispered conversations that made no sense, and always, always that door. His life outside the loop seemed a distant memory. Friends and colleagues noticed his increasing distance, his paranoia, and his obsession with doors. They whispered about stress and breakdowns, but Jake knew the truth. One evening, after yet another cycle, he found himself standing before the door, tears streaming down his face. Instead of opening it, he sat down, back pressed against its cold, hard surface. The fog around him thickened, and the cawing of crows grew deafening. And then, silence. Jake awoke, truly awake, in his own bed. The morning sun streamed in, and the sounds of the city filled the air. The weight of the looping nightmare seemed lifted. Weeks passed without incident. Life returned to normal, but Jake remained wary, always on the lookout for the door. Then, on a quiet Sunday morning, as he brewed his coffee and picked up his newspaper, a headline caught his eye. Mysterious disappearance of bank employee continues to baffle authorities. Below it was his own photograph. The room darkened, and a familiar cawing of crows filled the silence. Tale 3, Echoes of Yesterday. Lana had always been fascinated by history. So, when she landed a job at the town's local museum, a century-old mansion converted to house artifacts, it was a dream come true. Her tasks primarily involved cataloging and restoring donated items. A few weeks into her job, Lana received an anonymous donation, an old tape recorder, the kind with a manual hand crank. Along with it was a note to relive the echoes of yesterday. Play at your own risk. Intrigued, Lana decided to play the tape. The crackling voice of a woman, presumably from the early 1900s, filled the room. She spoke of her daily life, her forbidden love with a man named Edward, and the looming threat of war. Each playback revealed a different entry, a different emotion. Lana was hooked. She felt like a voyeur peeking into the past. However, as days turned into weeks, the entries began to change. They no longer seemed historical but eerily current. The woman spoke of events that mirrored Lana's life, conversations she had, places she visited, even her growing affection for a colleague named Eddie. Disturbed, Lana tried to stop listening, but curiosity overpowered her. One evening, after a particularly emotional entry mirroring Lana's own feelings of love and conflict, she heard a new sound on the tape, the soft, unmistakable whisper her own name. "Lana," the voice breathed, "join us." Panicking, she threw the tape recorder into a drawer, trying to dismiss what she'd heard. But that night, as Lana lay in bed, the haunting whispers continued, now free from the confines of the tape, filling her room. Shadows danced on her walls, forming silhouettes of scenes from the past, scenes she'd heard on the tape. Each night grew more intense. Lana would wake up to find old-fashioned items from the early 1900s on her nightstand. A lace glove, a dried rose, a wartime letter addressed to Edward. She began to see fleeting images of the woman from the tape in mirrors and reflective surfaces, always staring, always beckoning. Desperate, Lana decided to confront the tape. Playing it one last time, she heard an anguished cry, the voice full of pain and longing. "I am trapped, bound to the echoes of yesterday. But you can free me. Join me, Lana. Let us be one." That night, as the shadows grew darker and the whispers louder, Lana felt an overwhelming compulsion. She found herself standing at the edge of a cliff, the wind carrying the melancholic tunes of a bygone era. Before her stood the woman, extending her hand, the vast expanse of the roaring sea behind her. Lana's phone rang, breaking the trance. It was Eddie, worried after receiving a distressed voicemail from her, a message Lana had no recollection of sending. As they spoke, the apparition faded, the whispers grew silent, and the weight lifted. Realizing the dangers of the tape recorder, Lana decided to bury it, hoping to trap the echoes of yesterday forever. She returned to her normal life, shaken but safe, with Eddie by her side. But as days turned into months and months, into years, whispers began to circulate in town about a mysterious tape recorder donated to the museum, one that held the key to the past. And as history has a way of repeating itself, another curious soul, unaware of its history, decided to play it. Tale 4: Unhinged Realities. Sophie was an avid reader, losing herself in stories from fantasy to horror. One evening, she stumbled upon an old, leather-bound book at a yard sale titled Realities Unhinged. The vendor seemed eager to part with it, even letting it go for a mere dollar. The book, unlike any she had read, allowed the reader to choose their path. Each choice led to a different storyline and outcome. The tales within were vivid and engrossing, with characters that felt almost real. However, as Sophie delved deeper, she began to notice peculiarities. Sometimes, she'd choose a path, only to wake up the next day with memories of living out the events of the storyline. These experiences ranged from mundane to terrifying: a romantic dinner with a stranger, being chased through a dark forest, or attending a masked ball where faces remained eerily hidden. The line between fiction and reality started blurring. Sophie would find items from the stories in her room: a mask from the ball, mud on her shoes from the forest chase, or a note from the stranger. Growing fearful, she tried to avoid the book. But the allure was too strong. One evening, after a particularly harrowing story where she found herself trapped in a sinking ship, she woke up gasping for breath, her sheets soaked as though she'd been submerged in water. She decided to confront the book. Flipping to the last page, she found a note: "To shift between realities is a gift and a curse. Choose your paths wisely, for they may become your truth." Determined to end the cycle, Sophie chose a story set in a serene meadow, thinking it would be safe. As she read, she felt a sense of peace, surrounded by the gentle hum of nature. But as night fell in the story, she heard a soft lullaby, drawing her into a deep sleep. Upon waking, she found herself still in the meadow. Days turned into nights and back again, but there was no escape. The book was nowhere to be found. The serene setting became a prison. Loneliness set in, with only the lullaby keeping her company. Back in the real world, Sophie's friends and family searched for her, to no avail. Her room remained untouched, except for the open book on her bed. Months later, a friend, hoping to feel close to Sophie, decided to read from the book. As they ventured into a story about a serene meadow, they heard a soft lullaby. Looking up, they saw Sophie, forever trapped, singing the tune that had once ensnared her, now a siren's song drawing others into her lost reality. Tale 5. Spectral Sessions. Dr. Elise Harrell was a renowned therapist known for her unconventional methods. Her latest approach was gaining attention, a cutting-edge virtual reality technology that allowed patients to confront and communicate with their innermost fears and phobias, materialized as figments. Damien, a 30-year-old man, plagued by recurring nightmares of faceless beings, approached Dr. Harrell for help. The traditional methods hadn't worked, and he was desperate for a reprieve. Upon entering Dr. Harrow's dimly lit office, Damien was immediately struck by the myriad of paintings adorning the walls. Each depicted a person in anguish, surrounded by shadowy figures. When queried, Dr. Harrow responded, "They are representations of past sessions, reminders of the minds I've navigated." Positioning the VR headset onto Damien, Dr. Harrow began the session. "Remember," she said, "these figments are a part of you. Confront them, but do not let them dominate." Inside the virtual realm, Damien found himself in an eerily familiar setting, his childhood home. The atmosphere was thick, oppressive. As he ventured further, faceless beings, identical to those in his nightmares, began to materialize. He tried to converse, asking them their purpose and imploring them to leave him be. To his horror, they responded in unison, "We are fragments of forgotten memories, repressed pain. Confront the past to set us free." Guided by their hint, Damien revisited a traumatic memory, the night his parents argued, leading to their separation. As he faced the pain, the faceless entities began to morph, revealing themselves as younger versions of Damien, each representing a traumatic phase of his life. With Dr. Harrow's voice guiding him, Damien acknowledged each version, offering words of comfort and acceptance. Slowly, the shadows receded, replaced by a comforting light. As the session ended, Damien removed the headset, relief washing over him. However, the room looked slightly different, darker, colder. Dr. Harrow's once comforting presence now seemed menacing. "Why do you look afraid, Damien?" she whispered, her voice echoing unnaturally. "You've merely traded one figment for another." Confused, Damien watched in horror as Dr. Harrow dissolved into a shadowy figure, joining the ranks of faceless entities on the paintings, her eyes the only distinguishable feature, filled with torment. Panicking, Damien rushed out, only to find the clinic dilapidated, seemingly abandoned for years. A faded plaque outside read, "In memory of Dr. Elise Harrow, who disappeared mysteriously after pioneering virtual therapy." Haunted by the chilling session, Damien sought solace in group therapy. During one session, a new patient described being tormented by a new figure in her nightmares, a woman with sad eyes, eerily resembling Dr. Harrow. Tale 6. Echo Chamber. Liam had always been a man of science. When the ad popped up on his social media feed about a cutting-edge neurological procedure that would help patients reconcile with their traumatic past, he was intrigued. It claimed to utilize a method of diving into one's own memories, extracting the trauma, and allowing the patient to confront and overcome it. The project was named Echo Chamber. Upon reaching the facility, Liam was greeted by a young woman named Dr. Adler. "The process," she explained, "is simple. We connect you to our machine, and it maps out your traumatic memories. You'll relive them, but with the power to change the outcome." Skeptical but desperate to move past his haunting memories, Liam agreed. As the machine hummed to life and the visor lowered over his eyes, he was instantly transported to his childhood home. He was 8 again, hiding under his bed, the loud, aggressive shouts of his parents echoing through the corridors. The familiar pang of fear and sadness welled up, but armed with the knowledge that he could change the outcome, he emerged from his hiding spot, attempting to mediate between his parents. However, no matter what he did, the result was the same: angry voices, shattering glass, and a deep-rooted feeling of abandonment. The scene shifted. He was 15, standing at the edge of a pool, the jeers and laughs of his classmates ringing in his ears as they pushed him into the water, his desperate gasp for air as he struggled. Again, he tried to change the narrative, confronting his bullies, standing up for himself, but each attempt ended with the same suffocating plunge into the water. The cycle continued, each memory more traumatic than the last. Liam began to realize that, contrary to Dr. Adler's assurances, he couldn't alter the outcomes. Instead, he was trapped in a loop, endlessly reliving his worst moments. Panicking, he tried to disconnect, to wake up from this nightmare, but the memories were relentless, pulling him deeper. In a brief moment of respite, the scene changed to the facility where he met Dr. Adler. Except this time it was in ruins, decrepit and abandoned. An old newspaper lay on a table, the headline reading, "Echo Chamber Project Abandoned, Subjects Left in Endless Loop of Trauma." Despair settled in as Liam realized the truth. He was trapped in his own echo chamber, forever doomed to confront a past that refused to change. In the distance, he could hear Dr. Adler's voice, but it was distorted, echoing. "Remember," she said, "you have the power to change the outcome." But as the memories resumed their torturous cycle, Liam understood that her words were just another part of his never-ending nightmare. Tale 7, Deja Voodoo. Avery was always drawn to the eclectic and the mysterious. When she stumbled upon an old voodoo shop tucked away in the heart of New Orleans, her curiosity was piqued. The dimly lit interior was filled with an assortment of charms, dolls, and aged manuscripts. An old woman with deep-set eyes, seated behind a wooden counter, caught her attention. "Hey, seeking answers or just browsing?" she asked with a hint of mischief. "I suppose a bit of both," Avery replied, her gaze fixed on a peculiar doll. It had an uncanny resemblance to her. Same green eyes, same auburn hair, even the same birthmark on its left arm. Before she could react, the old woman said, "Ah, that's the Deja doll. It's said to carry the weight of one's past, present, and future. But be warned, its magic is not to be trifled with." Laughing it off as a tourist gimmick, Avery, on a whim, decided to purchase the doll. That night, in her hotel room, she was jolted awake by a dream, a memory, rather. She was back in her childhood home, the day her younger brother had accidentally fallen down the stairs. She had always blamed herself, thinking she could have caught him if she hadn't been on her phone. Shaken, she tried to go back to sleep. However, the same memory replayed, only this time, the outcome was different. She was there, right on time, catching her brother, saving him. A wave of relief washed over her. But as the days progressed, the dreams persisted. Each night, Avery relived a traumatic memory, but with an altered, happier ending. Initially therapeutic, it soon became suffocating. The line between reality and these altered memories began to blur. Seeking answers, Avery returned to the voodoo shop. To her horror, the shop was in ruins, long abandoned. However, she found the old woman nearby, her appearance unchanged. "You're trapped in the loop of the Deja doll," she declared ominously. "It offers a taste of the what-ifs of your life, but once you're ensnared, it doesn't let go." Desperate, Avery pleaded for a solution. "The only way out is to accept your past, with its pains and regrets. Only then can you break the cycle." Determined, that night, Avery steeled herself for the onslaught of memories. As they came, she forced herself to accept the reality of each one, embracing the pain, the guilt, and the regrets. Hours turned to days, days to weeks. Exhausted and on the brink of despair, Avery finally relived the memory of the day she bought the Deja doll, but this time, she walked away without it. Jolted awake, she found herself back in her hotel room, the doll gone. Elated, she believed she had broken free. However, as the days turned into a monotonous routine, Avery began to realize the horror of her situation. Every day was the same conversations, the same events, even the same meals. She was stuck in an endless loop, a prisoner of repetition and helplessness. She tried to confront the old woman, but the voodoo shop remained abandoned, a relic of the past. The realization dawned upon her that she might have escaped the altered memories of the Deja doll, but she was now trapped in its ultimate curse, the never-ending cycle of the same day. The city of New Orleans, with its vibrant culture and music, had transformed into Avery's personal purgatory, where every day was a haunting reminder of the voodoo she had so carelessly trifled with. Tale 8, Repressed. Nina, Max, and Lily had been inseparable since college. They shared laughs, adventures, but also their darkest secrets. Every year, they would reunite for a weekend getaway, reminiscing and catching up. This year, they chose a secluded cabin in the woods, far from the hustle and bustle of the city. On their first evening, while sitting around the campfire, the trio discovered an old, worn-out board game in the cabin named Repressed. Intrigued and a bit tipsy, they decided to play. The rules were straightforward. Draw a card, complete the challenge, and move forward. The objective was to reach the end, confronting and conquering your deepest fears. Max went first. He drew a card that read, "Revisit the day you felt most alone." Suddenly, the surroundings changed. The trio found themselves in a hospital, watching a younger Max sitting alone, holding his mother's lifeless hand, tears streaming down his face. As they witnessed the heartbreaking memory, shadowy figures began to form around them, manifestations of Max's feelings of abandonment and despair. To move on, Max had to confront them, assuring his younger self that he wasn't alone, that he would find love and companionship. Once the challenge was completed, the group was back at the cabin. Shaken, they hesitated to continue. But Lily, always the brave one, took the next turn. Her card read, "Revisit the day you felt most betrayed." The scene morphed into a college party, where younger Lily witnessed her then-boyfriend kissing her best friend. The atmosphere grew cold, and icy apparitions, representations of Lily's shattered trust, began circling the group. She approached her younger self, whispering words of strength and assurance, dispersing the looming specters. It was Nina's turn. Reluctantly, she drew a card. "Revisit the day you felt most guilty." The weight of her guilt materialized as monstrous, clawed creatures emerging from the ground, intent on dragging her down. The trio tried to fight them off, but the creatures were overwhelming, feeding on Nina's profound guilt and remorse. In a desperate attempt, Max and Lily tried to reassure Nina, urging her to forgive herself. But the trauma was too deeply rooted. As the creatures began to overpower them, the boundaries between the game and reality blurred. Nina's guilt consumed not just her, but also Max and Lily. Their screams echoed in the void as they were pulled into the abyss. The cabin stood silent, the board game repressed, waiting for its next players, preying on those who dared to confront their buried traumas. Tale 9, Self-Inflicted Wounds. Rain pelted the windshield, blurring the already dim lights of the city streets. Derek, in a fit of rage after a heated argument with his wife, sped through the slick roads, the last words of their fight echoing in his mind. He didn't see the traffic light change, nor the truck hurtling towards him. A blinding flash, a deafening crash, and everything went black. Inside the void, Derek's awareness slowly flickered. He found himself standing in front of his childhood home, witnessing a younger version of himself being berated by his strict father for a minor mistake. The humiliation, the shame, it was all too real. Time warped, pulling him to another memory, his teenage years. The taunts and jeers of classmates after a particularly embarrassing incident during a school play filled the air. The weight of ridicule, the burning cheeks, it was happening all over again. Scene after scene, Derek was forced to relive the lowest points of his life, betrayals, heartbreaks, failures, and regrets. The cacophony of his mistakes threatened to drown him. In this cruel theater of the mind, Derek's awareness grew with each replayed agony. He tried to shout, to change the outcomes, but his pleas fell on deaf ears. The feeling of powerlessness was suffocating. Between these torturous episodes, a hospital room intermittently materialized. Derek, now an onlooker to his own lifeless body, watched as doctors and nurses rushed about, machines beeping ominously. He could see the hopeful eyes of his wife, children, and friends, praying for a sign of recovery. Their whispered conversations, their tears, became the backdrop to his internal torment. As days turned into weeks, Derek's desperation grew. He fought, with every ounce of strength, to wake up, to hold his loved ones, to apologize, to make amends. but every attempt was met with another wave of painful memories, as if his own mind was punishing him for past transgressions. Finally, in one lucid moment amidst the tempest, Derek found himself back at the scene of the crash. The mangled car, the pouring rain, the cacophony of sirens, and amidst it all, his own haunting realization that this self-inflicted wound was the cause of his endless suffering. Just as the weight of this realization bore down on him, the scene shifted to the familiar hospital room. The atmosphere was somber. His wife, children, and a few close friends surrounded his bed. A stern-faced doctor, looking weary, spoke in hushed tones, "I'm sorry, but the brain damage is extensive. We've done everything we can. Derek will never recover." His wife's heart-wrenching sob echoed in the room, merging with Derek's internal screams. The finality of the doctor's words was the ultimate blow, cementing Derek's fate. Trapped in his mind, a prisoner of his own making, forced to relive his worst moments for eternity. Tale 10, Unseen Strings. The theater was dim, lit only by the soft glow of the stage lights. Silhouettes of marionettes adorned the walls, casting eerie, elongated shadows. At the center of it all was Alden, a master puppeteer known throughout the town for his lifelike performances. Each puppet moved as if imbued with a soul, dancing and acting with an uncanny realism. Lately, however, Alden had been feeling off. Each morning, he'd wake up with a sense of dread, his hands bearing fresh cuts and splinters. The once beloved puppetry room seemed more like a prison, the strings seemingly tightening around him. One evening, as Alden began his performance, he felt a strange pull on his limbs. At first, it was subtle, a nudge here and a twitch there. But as the show progressed, the tugs became more forceful. It was as though some unseen entity was manipulating him, just as he did with his marionettes. The show took a dark turn. Under the influence of this invisible force, Alden made the puppets enact violent and grotesque scenes, much to the horror of the audience. They watched in frozen terror as the puppets, under Alden's involuntary control, turned on one another in a macabre dance of chaos. Days turned into nights, and Alden's plight worsened. Not only was he being controlled during performances, but also in his daily life. Whispers began to spread throughout the town. People spoke of Alden's sudden, inexplicable acts of cruelty and malice, so out of character for the gentle puppeteer they once knew. Desperate for answers, Alden sought the guidance of a local medium. Through a seance, they attempted to communicate with the unseen entity. A cold wind swept through the room, extinguishing the candles. The medium, her voice echoing with an otherworldly resonance, conveyed the spirit's message: "You played with souls, now a soul plays with you." It was revealed that the wood Alden used for his latest puppet came from a tree atop an unmarked grave, a burial site for a vengeful spirit. This spirit now sought to turn the tables on Alden, making him its puppet. Frantic, Alden attempted to sever his connection with the cursed puppet. He tried to destroy it, to burn it, but each attempt was thwarted by the unseen force that controlled him. His life became a nightmare. Friends and loved ones distanced themselves, terrified of Alden's unpredictable actions. One fateful night, the theater's lights flickered and went out. The townsfolk heard agonized screams but were too afraid to intervene. When dawn broke, they entered the theater to find Alden on stage, tangled in puppet strings, hanging lifelessly above his marionettes. It was a chilling scene that would forever haunt the town's memory. The master puppeteer, once in control of his wooden performers, now a lifeless puppet himself, forever suspended by unseen strings,